Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, thanks and welcome to the show. If I can get this microphone straight. All right, thanks. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Blog Talk radio show, internet show, like he just said. It is daylight savings times, folks. I was trying to get that out, and I finally did get it out. Daylight savings time, at least here in Chicago. I'm here in Arizona, is the only state without any kind of daylight savings time at all. But that's, if that's what they want, then good for Arizona. But it is gorgeous in the city of Chicago. It's daylight savings time. Usually, when I'm giving this show at this time, it's pitch black. You know, I'm sitting, I'm looking out the window here onto the avenue on the north side of the city. And it's not summery. Of course, we've had some snow, lots of snow. It's gray, it's cloudy, but hey, wow, it's light. It's not dark. You know what I'm saying? Daylight savings time. We did lose an hour of sleep, you know, last night when the time was set for it. And it's nice to see daylight like this in the city of Chicago. A lot of people are still, it's still cold as hell out there, folks. It's cold out there in the city of Chicago. It's cold. People are bundling up, and they're all bundled up, as I can see, because it's cold. But hey, at least it's not dark at 6:03 p.m. Chicago time, Central Standard Time. At least it's not dark. It's in the 30s or something, or rather it could be worse. But I'm hearing that there's going to be more snow in the city of Chicago later on tonight. We may have a blizzard you know, because some people are calling this a late winter storm that's hitting the Northeast, I believe, Philadelphia, Boston, New York. And we're going to get some of it here because of weather. People are saying, well, it's the same system, you know, so, and this is for Chicago. This is actually the first real snowstorm of the season. You know, we have a lot of flights canceled, you know, in and out of Chicago, in and out of places around the U.S. and also, of course, O'Hare Field. So it's a late winter storm. It's hitting us late. And I've said this several times on the show while we were having all this nice weather during this winter season that we were being set up for the kill. And I think this is part of it. I mean, because basically, folks, winter in the city of Chicago was never here. You know, it said winter on the calendar, but it felt like spring outside. So I do think that this is what we're getting is what we probably missed, you know. And so early March, this is saying, hey, folks, this is still winter. Just because it's March and you've been having a good time so far, it's been really nice. But now it's going to get very, very cold, windy, blowing snow, blizzard, thunder, lightning. You know, you're going to get yours. Along with the people on the East Coast. East Coast and Northeast, you know, up and around there. If I can find the other information. Okay, Northeast, New York City, Boston, commuter problems. 85 million people in the crosshairs of this late winter storm. 85 million people. Wow. Lots of snow and a snowstorm, you know. Philadelphia, as I've just mentioned, and it's going to be a rude one. So we have to pray that everybody comes out of this thing okay. No deaths, no injuries, none of that stuff. So if you have to try to keep yourself safe, find the best place you can hide from this mess if it's too strong. You know, so there, the basement, the bathroom, you know, you want to keep yourself warm. I mean, you want to keep yourself safe in this kind of and warm in this kind of weather. Okay. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We are here, folks. My author, the guest, sorry about that, author Lisa Cherry Beaumont is expected to be on the show today. I say expected because there's always something could arise. You know, like, you know, I couldn't make it, or I forgot, or the weather. You know, people have all kinds of excuses, but hopefully she will be here today, and she will be talking about, I believe, let me see, what will she be talking about, hopefully? Personal development. Yeah, all right. But if you think about it, all of us could probably use some advice on personal development. So Lisa Cherry Beaumont will be on the show today, hopefully. You know, the weather is pretty bad. It's pretty awful. You know, it is, even in the city of Chicago. But hey, wow, because of daylight savings times, daylight savings time, it is still looking great outside. So you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We've been off for 3 days since Friday, and it is great to be back, folks. It is great to be back on the show. I said, whenever I'm not on the show, I'm walking around. I'm walking around bothering people because I'm talking about this and talking about that. But once I'm on the show, they say, shut up, George, shut up. Save it for the show, George. Shut up, save it for the show now. Don't say too much. And I have wound up saving what I want to really say until the show starts. And welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. 347-857-1762. It is wonderful, folks. I'm glad to be here. I'm glad you're out there. I'm glad you're listening. I opened up the chat, so the chat is open in case you want to go there. And that's fine. A lot of times, the chat, we forget to open up the chat, you know, and people are calling, George, why don't you open up the chat? Open up the chat. Okay. All right, so the chat is open, and it'll be open all week if we don't forget. Make sure I remind somebody to always open up chat. Maybe we should get a producer. No, I'm the producer. Okay, all right. Okay, Lisa Cherry Beaumont. I like that name. Lisa Cherry Beaumont will be on the show today. She's going to be talking personal development. Oh, man, I know a lot of you guys heard this. I mean, Trump and his White House goons are have already trying to sell us on this repealing the Obamacare and replacing it. They're trying to sell us on the replacement. And a lot of people aren't buying it, you know, because the Congressional Budget Office says that 24 million people will be uninsured under the Trump Care. Some of them calling it Trump Care now. And the people, Trump's people are denying it. They're saying, hell no, the Congressional Budget Office is wrong. They're off. That's not true. And they're saying 14 million will lose coverage. Medicaid, Medicare, Medicaid under this new upgrade in the Obamacare. So, you know, and my understanding of what I really want to say is, and my thinking is, the White House is disputing this. They're saying this is not true. This is not going to happen. But this is the Congressional office budget here. These people, that's what they get paid to do, is crunch numbers. Of course, it's not going to be pinpoint right there on the money when it comes to these numbers, but it'll be fairly close. And the Trump administration, they're denying that a lot of these people will be thrown off. And when has the Republicans done anything that benefits the people of America? I can't remember. Republicans usually do things for themselves, for their party, for their party bosses, instead of the people out here. So they are disputing these numbers. Trump and his White House staff, they are disputing these numbers. The thing I want to say is, why would anybody believe anything that comes out of Trump's mouth or anybody involved with the Trump administration? Why would we believe anything when there's so many lies? Trump has lied so many times. And the thing about it, I just can't stand the fact that he gets away with these lies. He gets away with them. Congress doesn't hold his feet to the fire. If this was a Democrat, they would have impeached him a long time ago. But even before he'd gotten his ass in the White House, he would have been gone if he'd have done some of the things and said some of the things and has been as awful as Trump has been. A Democrat would have been thrown out on his ass. But that's not happening because a lot of the Republicans are aiding and abetting Donald Trump. They are aiding and abetting him. So that means that this could be a conspiracy to screw over America. You notice how you never hear the slogan, "Make America Great Again," from Donald Trump? Because he knows he's not making it great. He's making it a lot worse than what it has ever been. The slogan that Donald Trump used, "Making America Great Again," it was just a con. Just like everything else he does. It was just something he just threw the hell out there and people ate it up. The fools, the dummies, the idiots, they ate it up. And another thing with this congressional, with the congressional numbers, this is tough. 24 million people being thrown off the insurance rolls. And a lot of these people are Trump supporters that will be upended off. They won't have any health care if this thing goes through, which I don't think it will. But the Donald Trump supporters should come to the realization that this guy really don't give a damn about them. He doesn't. He fooled them. He conned them into giving them his vote, period. And now he's, from my understanding, they're trying to backtrack on this Obama wiretapping thing. The backtracking, they can forget about that. There's no backtracking from this. This was too wide. This was too detrimental. This was too explosive for him to be backtracking on this because he lied on Obama. He has no evidence. He has no proof. He has nothing. He can't. There's nothing that's being submitted as evidence or proof. A lot of Republicans say, "Hey, man, you, this is explosive. What you've said about Obama wiretapping the Trump Tower," which is not true, and they know it's not true. We know it's not true. Trump knows it's not true. So everybody's asking, people are saying, well, Trump will not apologize. He hasn't apologized for all the other lies he's told. No, I don't think he's going to apologize. They're going to try and skimmy their way out of this. I mean, Kellyanne Conway's on television, on cable, making all kind of stupid and dumb and lying reasons to try to get Trump out of this mess. Sean Spicer, who is Sean Spicer? His White House press secretary, okay? He's trying to ease out of this shit. He's trying to ease Trump out of this big lie, but it's going to stick with him. This lie that he told and perpetrated on President Obama is going to stick with this Trump administration forever. Some people saying he should apologize. He's not going to do that. But there should be some kind of sanction, some kind of repercussions, reprimands in the Trump administration for this big, colossal ass lie that he told, that he doubled down on 6 times with tweets. And now they're trying to skimmy their way out of this because they don't have any proof. No proof. And Trump trying to tell us something about healthcare. Give me a break. You can't believe anything that comes out of his mouth. Every time he opens his mouth, there's a lie coming out. His surrogates that's going around the corner, going around the television circuit, talk show circuit, lying through their teeth for this man. And I do believe if 24 million people are thrown off this healthcare within years to come, and if it's true, it's colossal. But the White House they're fighting back. You know why they're fighting back? Because they know that the midterms are coming up. And a lot of these representatives and a lot of these senators who voted for this mess, who may vote for this mess, they're going to lose their jobs. A lot of these senators and representatives who ran scary cowards from their town halls, they're going to lose their damn jobs. And then there's going to be a Democrat Congress. And Trump will not be able to get anything through. But he will still have that executive authority using his pen. He can do a lot of damage with that. He can do a bunch of damage just by, signing things into law. But there's no doubt about it, folks. Trump has gutted Obama. Obama doesn't even have a legacy anymore. And if Obama doesn't come out and address this blatant, big, fat, blatant lie that this guy told on him with no proof, no evidence. Everybody's asking for some. He has none. If Obama don't come out and address it, he's another big coward. A lot of us want Obama to sue him. I'm pretty sure this is going around in Obama circles to sue this guy for defamation of character. I would sue him. Sue him. But I don't think Obama's going to have the nerve. Obama's above it all. He's more of a statesman. I don't think he's going to do it. But a lot of us would love to see Obama sue this guy for dragging his name through the mud, for dragging his name through the mud for no apparent reason at all, just to try to change the narrative. That's all Trump did. He used Obama to try to change the narrative away from the investigation into Russia. That's all he done. And he's firing a lot of these U.S. attorneys because, he wants to put in his own people so they can lie and fly when the investigations get underway and protect his ass. I tell you, folks, we got the good fellas in the White House. We got the goons. We got the gangsters. You can imagine what's going around that White House when the cameras are not on, when the cameras are not present. screaming and yelling and bitching. you can imagine. They might even be using the White House as a whorehouse, a brothel. If you've seen that picture of Kellyanne Conway disrespecting the White House like that, with her feet up on the couch like that, that's totally disrespect. She acted as if she was on at home in her personal setting, in her own house. That's the White House. That's the people house. She's there because people didn't vote, or they voted in the wrong way. But the thing about it, a lot of Donald Trump's supporters are going to be suffering under his administration, the people who put him in office. A lot of these people are having second thoughts now. You still got some that are double downing and supporting Donald Trump. A few. I'm going to say a few because that's what I believe. That's what I believe. You know, so replacing Obamacare is going to be expensive. It's going to be expensive. He's going to cut a lot of programs, folks. Social Security, Medicaid, it's coming. Because Trump needs, I don't know how serious he is, still serious about building a wall on the West Coast. I don't know how serious he is, but I do know he has to find the money to do it. Mexico is not going to pay for it like he promised everybody. I mean, the way he was saying it, like Mexico is going to pay for the wall. He almost had me believing that Mexico was going to pay for the wall. The taxpayers, if there is a wall, if there is a wall, and that's a big if, it's going to be shoved. The money's going to be shoved out by the taxpayers. Programs, entitlements, all the kinds of programs for the needy, the poor, the middle class will be or are being slashed by the Trump administration. Just like a lot of the programs in Illinois for the same kinds of people are being slashed by Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. It's something that these Republicans have all this money, all the money in the world, and yet they pick on the most vulnerable people who don't have anything, who are struggling to feed their kids, struggling to pay their mortgages, their rents, struggling to not be homeless. Then we have people in our government who are just monsters, who don't give a damn. And like I said before, folks, I don't believe anything that comes out of the Trump administration. Not one of them guys, even those folks that he elected to the cabinet, I don't believe any of them. I don't believe, just like Trump may not believe the media on some things, I don't believe the Trump administration on anything, period. He gave a nice speech a few weeks ago to the American people, reading from a teleprompter. None of that. If it's talking about doing something for America, it's not true. Trump and his goons are going to do everything to hurt America. But in their minds, you know, it's a good thing. They're going to dispute even the truth. These guys, they don't like the truth. They dispute the truth because they don't want to do anything but lie and want you to buy it. Now Trump is probably trying to ease his way out of this Obama debacle when it comes to wiretapping his Trump Tower. That never happened. It never happened. Now he's going to try and change the narrative to something else, hoping that we all start talking about healthcare and not the wiretaps. The lying wiretap thing, and hoping we talk about healthcare and not the investigation into Russia. He's hoping we talk about healthcare and not all the suits that are being brought to him by 20 to 30 women for sexual harassment and groping. A lot of these suits from these young ladies, I'm pretty sure he paid them off. He paid it paid them off because he didn't want to go to court. If he went to court, everything would be exposed, hoping we would pay attention to his health care debacle than to talk about his taxes. See, he's trying to change the narrative on everything, everything controversial in his administration, everything controversial about Donald Trump. He knows how to change the narrative. Why and how? Because he's president. Because the media, the people are going to be relying on his every word. So he successfully changed the narrative. I think he successfully did it. But nobody has forgotten about any of this stuff. Russia, his taxes, groping, lying on Obama about tapping his building. And there's lots and lots and more stuff. And I've said, like I said from the beginning, if this would have been a Democrat doing the things that Donald Trump has done and will do, he would have been impeached a long time ago. But the Republicans are aiding and abetting Donald Trump. I think they want Donald Trump because I think they want Donald Trump in office, want to keep him there because Donald Trump is going to give them what they always wanted. They couldn't get under George Bush. They couldn't get under Obama, but they're going to try to get everything they want under Donald Trump. All of these lies. I mean, if you have a job, you know, if you lied as much as Donald Trump did on your job, would you think they would still have you working there? No. Donald Trump have gotten away with too much dirt, too much that's unlawful, too many lies, deceitful, falsehoods, and he gets away with this. Say things with no proof, and he gets away with it. He's not going to apologize. They're going to try to slide their asses out of this. That's why he is talking about healthcare. Right now, you ask Donald Trump about the wiretapping charges that he leveled on Obama, he won't even answer you. He won't talk. He'll dismiss it. He won't even answer. He's a lying fucking pig. Pardon my language. And I truly, truly do wish Obama would sue him. He's got plenty of ammunition to do this to this guy. Sue him. And then maybe if he successfully sues him, maybe Obama can regain some of his legacy because these guys are trying to rip him apart. And they will rip him apart if he doesn't come out forceful and do something about what's going on, even with him. His life is in the balance. His career is in the balance. Because these assholes put it out there. Obama, please, please, please sue this son of a bitch. Sue him. And take him to court. Don't let him try to buy you off like he's bought so many of these people who were suing him off, you know, settled out of court. You know, that's what he's done with a lot of these people. Settled out of court. Because he know he couldn't win. He goes to court. He's going to have to, you know, the judge is going to say, hey, wow. Hopefully, if it's not one of those Republican judges, if this judge, a bipartisan kind of a judge, that's what we have to get. But anyway, he's just paying these people off. I don't think he could pay Obama off if Obama decided to sue him. I'm pretty sure he'd try. But it's just fascinating how this guy get away with so much. So much. He can't get away with lying like this. Something has to happen. A sanction or something. Sanction this guy. You know, a reprimand or something, some sort of repercussions for putting this on the American people and then trying to blow it off like it never happened. Wow. Okay, folks, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook, Blog Talk Radio. I'm on Google. I'm all over the place, Twitter, Instagram. I guess you have to be all of those places when you are a radio host and a writer and all that kind of thing, author. I guess you have to reviewer, parent, maybe. I guess you have to be make yourself available. I'm trying to say make yourself available if you have to. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's see what we have here. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hello there. It's Lisa Cherry Beaumont. How are you doing?
Hey, you sound so, how are you doing? You sound so cherry.
Cherry. You can call me Cherry. Yeah, you can call me Cherry. Okay. That's my nickname. I've got Cherry in my name. It's actually my nickname. So you can call me Cherry, George.
Oh, no problem. Cherry. You know what? It's just been phenomenal because you are, I believe you're going to talk about personal development, or am I right? Or is that? Yeah.
That's my thing. Okay. Yep.
Okay. Give my audience a short bio and then tell us a little bit about how you came to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a life purpose coach, and specifically what I do is help people to understand what's meaningful to them so that they can do more of it and hopefully turn it into either a job or a business. So that's what I do. I basically want to make people happier, George. That's all I'm about. How did I start out doing it? I think I started out doing it by realizing that I myself was ticking all the boxes that society says will make us happy. And I wasn't. And so I went on a bit of a personal quest to try and understand what it is that makes us happy. Wound up, very, very long story short, wound up as a life coach, and realized that all the people that I was coaching, I was a general coach to begin with. While I was doing my training, I was coaching people in all sorts of things, you know, diet and health and relationships and goodness knows what, because the skills are still the same. But what I realized is that the problems that people were coming to me with, the reason that they weren't quite satisfied and fulfilled and happy in whatever was not working out for them, was really to do with the fact that they weren't spending their time doing things that made them happy. So what I try to do is get people into a position where they can feel confident to be able to go ahead and do things that make them happy, and then ultimately turn it into either a business or do it for a living, or at least do more of it in their lives.
Wow, that sounds great. It sounds
beautiful.
It's wonderful. Because because it's a lot of people out there that are very, very depressed, sad, lonely, and they're not enjoying life to its fullest. A lot of young people aren't enjoying life to its fullest. If they are, it's not basically what they want. So I have a question. How do you turn someone who is basically depressed into someone who is happy?
That is a fantastic question. So, I mean, I'm not a trained psychologist. I've studied some psychology. I've studied a lot of psychology, but I'm not a trained psychologist. Mm-hmm. I would recommend, first of all, for somebody to see a psychologist. But I think before hitting the drugs, we need to start turning their mindset around, which I know isn't the easiest thing in the world, but there are exercises that we can do, and they're very, very small, simple things to help us to just transform our thoughts, because the reasons that a person is depressed is to do with what's going on in their mind. And so if we can change some of the thought processes around, that can help them to feel a little bit more open, a little bit more positive about their circumstances. And so one of the first things that I do, and something that I do regularly myself when I remember to, Particularly if I'm feeling a little bit grumpy, you know, I'm a bit complainy, I'm a bit of a moaner, I might get up with, you know, a bit of a bad mood and, oh, you know, listen to the neighbors making the noise and, you know, whatever, I'm a bit of a bad mood, and then I have to go, stop. Look at the good things around you. Write down, or at least speak out, some of the things that you are grateful for. So rather than focusing on the negatives, which there are many, of course, understandably, there are lots of negatives in our lives, but start focusing on the positives. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a trip to Paris or a lottery win or a marriage proposal or a new baby or anything huge. Just little things like I slept in a warm bed last night. I've got a roof over my head. I've got something nice for breakfast. I've got a job to go to. I got a phone call from my mum, or, you know, whatever, just little things to feel grateful for, the basics. And that's usually where that's where I start for myself. And it's where I have to, you know, I have to keep reminding myself to do these things, because we do, you know, we can live sometimes in a very negative environment. And we can slip into a negative mindset very, very easily, particularly with what you've just been, you know, what you've just been talking about before we got on the phone.
Yeah.
We can get ourselves into a very negative mindset, and it starts to affect us. It can start to really affect us personally. So if you can start looking at the positive, begin with that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think it's a mindset. I think you do have to get out of the someone depressed. I mean, most of the time, I think when a person is depressed, they probably mistakenly made themselves depressed, and by thinking negative thoughts, by thinking I don't like myself, nobody likes me. I mean, I can't do anything right. You know, I'm too old. I can't. Nobody, you know, thoughts like that. And in some cases, I think it's medical induced. I mean, it's depression is a sickness, as was what I'm trying to say. And yeah, basically, if you try to think positive, be positive, smile, you know, and just be happy, I think that's one of the aspects of ridding yourself of depression, because a lot of people put this disease on themselves, and it is a disease and it can be life threatening.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, I've been there myself, actually. I didn't have a very strong depression, but I did suffer mild to moderate depression. It's been about sort of 10 or 11 years ago. And I recognized it eventually. I actually picked up a book on a shelf in a supermarket that was just entitled Depression. I thought, because I just thought my life was terrible, which of course it wasn't at all. My life was great, but I didn't feel like it was. And so I picked up this book and started reading it, and I recognized myself in every, I was reading going, oh, that's me. And I thought, oh goodness me, I've got a problem. And so I figured out what I needed to do. And I literally just did everything I could possibly find to make myself happy again. And so, you know, I made sure that I was getting enough sleep, made sure that I was eating properly, made sure that I was exercising, getting enough sunshine, spending time with loved ones. And if I couldn't spend time with loved ones as much as I wanted to, get them on the phone, doing all the things, meditating, everything that I could possibly, and doing a gratitude list was a big one. And then I went and got myself a psychologist. I had a few sessions with a psychologist, and within a few weeks, turned it all around. And it was like I was looking through rose-tinted spectacles. But that's the first thing that we need to do in order to live a happier life is you can do all those things, and then you can come out of it and go, yeah, I'm feeling good, but still not quite be satisfied with everything that's going on. And that's okay. You know, that's then you can start looking at, right, okay, you're in a better position in your mind, then you're in a better place to then start making some positive changes, some tangible changes to your life, other than making sure that you're taking care of yourself and thinking positive thoughts.
Right, exactly. And one of the things I like about what you just said, you're turning your experiences into helping others who've gone through or are going through some of the things you've gone, your experiences, you are out there helping people who have gone through some of the things that you may have gone through. And are you an author? Have you written a book on this?
Well, it's really funny you should mention it, because I was writing a book a few years ago about it's a system on how to be happy. Now, I have got a couple of books out, and I've got one of them on Amazon, which is called Life Purpose Alchemy. And that is for helping people to understand what work they need to be doing. What is their life purpose? What work do they need to be doing? But I've got another book in me that I was talking to somebody earlier about this book and saying, you know, I think it's time I got this book out and ready now, because there's I had a few gaps in it, George. There were a few gaps that I was like, I'm not really sure what I need to put here. Because I have a tendency to work in sort of, you know, sections, steps, bullet points. So I'm very process orientated. And there were a couple of things in this book that I kind of had some gaps, and I was like, okay, well, it'll come in time. And then I'm moving house tomorrow, and I pulled out some papers earlier, and I was like, is that book? Why did I stop writing this? What happened? And I looked through where the gaps were, and now I've got answers to these gaps. And so I was like, I need to get this book out. I need to get this book out. I don't know what I'm going to call it yet. It's got some sort of dodgy working title about, I don't know, 21 Days to Happiness, or I don't know, whatever it is. Yeah. I can't even remember. But it's something that I've been bashing away at, and it's time for it to come out.
How are some people reacting at what you do?
How are some people reacting to what I do? Well, positively, yeah.
Okay, so, no problem.
clients that I work with get very quick results if they work with me. If they work through my workbook, I get, I've got reviews for my book, and I've got people who tell me that they've worked through my book and email me and say that it's made a huge difference to them. So yeah, I get very positive feedback. And funnily enough, I've got a Facebook group, and in the past I've done little happiness courses, just, you know, come and join in with us. We're going to do a few things a day for however many days. And I get great feedback, and I get them all to do an online test. It's not my test. It's just something that I found online to measure their level of happiness at the beginning, and then measure their level of happiness at the end of the little challenge that we do. And all of them, everybody who takes part every day, their happiness level shoots right up.
How do you react when someone gives you positive feedback on something you've said or one of your books? How do you react? How does that make you feel?
I usually cry. Because I feel aww, like, you know, just emotion, because I feel so delighted that I'm doing something that's making a difference to people. You know, they're not just going, so, oh, that's great. You know, it really makes a difference.
So it's like tears of joy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Tears of joy. Just like, oh, this is great.
Okay. All right. Lisa Cherry Beaumont on the George Wilder Jr. Show, and she's talking personal development. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
On what I do specifically, I started out by helping people to be happier. Mm-hmm. Personal development really is all about just becoming a better version of yourself. And it doesn't mean that you're better than anybody else. It's not about comparing yourself to other people, but it's all about growth as a person. Learning the things that will help you to have an easier, smoother ride of life, because life is hard. My goodness, it's difficult. We've got so many challenges.
It is difficult. It is tough. It's rough.
Isn't it? Nobody said that adulting was going to be this difficult, George, did they? I'm not sure I'd have come this far. I would have been like, I'm going to stay as a child. Thank you very much.
it's difficult. I tell my son that every day. It's difficult.
Yeah, it is. And when we go on a path of personal development, it helps us to deal with things in a more smooth way. So rather than every little thing that could, because life does, there are deaths and redundancies and, you know, illnesses and goodness, these things will happen. It is life. And us trying to think that we should go along and nothing bad's ever going to happen, it's rubbish. That's just not going to happen. And so personal development is all about learning to deal with life when things come along. Mm-hmm. How to, you know, it's going to rock your boat a little bit, but how it's not going to tip your boat upside down.
Yeah.
Just learning to keep your boat afloat, really.
Yeah. How would people get in touch with you if they wanted to learn a little bit more about this, or did they just want to check you out? How would they get in touch with you?
They can come to my website, which is lisacherrybeaumont.com.
Mm-hmm. And you said you have a book or books on Amazon?
I do, yeah. So if they have a look on Amazon at Life Purpose Alchemy, that's a present book that I've got for sale. I've also got another book as well, mm-hmm. which is a general coaching book that I get a lot of great feedback mm-hmm. for, which is not on Amazon yet, but it is available on my website. So again, lisacherrybeaumont.com/books, and then you'll see there a couple of books that I've got. One of them is Life Purpose Alchemy, which helps you with your work, helps you to decide what job you should be doing. And the other one is, you feel something isn't quite right in your life, something needs to change, but maybe you can't quite put your finger on it, or maybe you do know what it is, and maybe it's not your work, maybe you think it's something else. This book will take you through a set of steps so that you come out the other end knowing full well what it is you need to do, and you've got a set of action steps to get you started on it as well.
Wow. What do you like about writing?
Oh, what do I like about writing? Well, one of the benefits to writing is that you mm-hmm. can reach a lot of people at the same time. So if I, like podcasting, I guess, if I am coaching somebody one-to-one, I can go very deep with that person and help them very uh-huh. deeply and very personally. Mm-hmm. But with writing, my books specifically are not story books. They're not novels. They're not, you know, a nice sort of story about my life at all. There's nothing about me in those books at all. The books are questions because I'm a coach.
Excuse me, but the books are based on some of your experiences that you've had in life.
The books are, they're actually workbooks. So what they are is they're sets of questions. And so they're asking you to answer questions, and every question leads on from the last. And so you build on your answers as you go through the book. So no, there isn't anything, I don't think there's anything in either of the books that's really about me personally. There might be sort of one or two little bits here and there, but barely anything. So what do I like about writing is that, the particular books that I've written can help to coach a lot of people at the same time. And it's very affordable, obviously. Working with me one-to-one, you have to book, I have a waiting list. And it's not $10. So I can help more people with my books. That's the thing.
Yeah. You know, I think that's true. That's why I asked you, were you an author? Did you write? Because a lot of the people who listen to this show, they buy books. And I'm pretty sure your book would stand right out there because it's about personal development, about, you know, getting people to see the best in themselves. And people need to do that. You know, see the best in themselves and actually turn their lives around without this negative thinking. And that's great. So author Lisa Cherry Beaumont on the George Wilder Jr. Show, I want to thank you so much for coming on. Would you like a link to the show? I can send you a link, the link to this show that you were on, that you're on.
Yeah, that would be marvelous. Yeah, it's been fun. Thank you.
Yeah, it has been fun. Hey, would you like to come back someday? And I would love to have you back.
Of course, George. That would be my pleasure. And I'm in Spain at the moment. So it is, what time is it? It's 10 to 1 in the morning. But hopefully we might come on again soon. I'm going to the States in a couple of days. So hopefully we can connect at a time that's not the middle of the night for me.
Cherry, I couldn't care if you were in Timbuktu. I would love to have you on the show.
I would be delighted.
All right. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye. Thanks for coming on.
Okay, bye-bye. Take care. Bye.
Bye. All right, Lisa Cherry Beaumont on the George Wilder Jr. Show. I love people who are very, very lively on the show and makes the show. it makes my day and it makes the show. All right, Lisa Cherry Beaumont. I'm looking at her name on the marquee here. And something's blocking my way, but we're gonna make it through this, folks. This is the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks for your feedback. Thanks for all your encouragement. It means so much to me. We'll be right back. All right, folks, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. And I want to thank my guest author, Lisa Cherry Beaumont. She was magnificent. I want to say something about diabetes. A lot of people out here have diabetes. And a lot of people have diabetes and they don't even know that they have diabetes. But they do know that something is wrong. They're not feeling like themselves. And they don't know what it is. Diabetes is a killer. I don't know much about it myself, but if you have it, I would probably tell you to learn as much as you can about it. And if you're feeling weird or strange or things seem out of whack, go see your doctor. It's very, very important. Diabetes is a killer. It's not your friend. Some people can, there are so many people who can actually live a normal life with it. And and then there are some people who just let the disease overwhelm them. And by overwhelming them, you know, it takes their life. So, this is new. People can't take it. They can't deal with it. And they wind up dying from it. But it is a disease to be reckoned with. And I applaud all of those people out here in the world today who are bringing light to this deadly disease. And it is deadly, folks. It is deadly. And I'm pretty sure you may know somebody out there with the disease. You may know someone who is suffering from diabetes. Like I said before, people do live normal lives if they're doing what they should be doing, is taking their medication, exercising, being positive. And this is a disease that you have to fight. I mean, you just can't give up, because if you give up, you're gone. It's a disease where you have to fight. You have to fight for your life. If you want it, you're going to fight for it. Just like cancer, you got to fight for what you because if you don't fight for it, you're going to lose. And so many people have died, let diabetes take their life because they didn't fight. They found out about it too late and didn't do much about it. It is a deadly disease and it will take your life. And I applaud those people out here on the radio, on television, who are bringing awareness to it and trying to get people checked out for it. And I just have to say to those people who think diabetes is not so deadly as cancer, I would have to say you're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. This should tell you a little bit more about it. If you don't know much about diabetes, if you want to learn more, listen to this.
What happens is that the diabetes, they tell you, is a chronic disease. So this is what happens, and this is what happens in all studies. And if you've taken medications, you know this is what happens. So your sugars start out actually not bad. As you take the medications, the sugars actually comes down a bit. But over the years, it kind of, the effect sort of wears off. So then you wind up having to add more and more and more medications. So what happens is that no matter what drug you take, so these compare three drugs, metformin, glibride, and rosiglitazone. So no matter what drug you take, the initial effect is very good, up to about 6 months. And then after about 6 months, the effect kind of wears off, and you can see that the sugar slowly goes up. And so what happens is that you wind up on a second medication or a third medication. And this is pretty well what happens to everybody. So if you've had diabetes for a while, and many people have had it for 10, you know, 12, 15 years, what you find is that you start off on metformin, then you go to metformin and glibride, then maybe three agents or four agents, then you wind up on a little bit of insulin, then you wind up on more insulin and more insulin. And if you think about the diabetes, if you think about who has, you know, mild diabetes and who has severe diabetes, you can see that the people who are just on the little bit of metformin are, you know, have mild diabetes, and if you're on a lot of insulin, you have very severe diabetes. So in fact, over these years, despite what everybody tells you, your diabetes is just getting worse and worse and worse. So your sugars might go up, they might go down, but your diabetes is actually getting worse. And I think that's what confuses people a lot, because they think that the sugar and the diabetes are the same thing, but they're actually not. But over that period of time, you can see that no matter what, it's actually progressing, and they say it's a progressive disease. So this is the thing that you have to understand, that the sugars and the diabetes are actually two different things. So diabetes, the real heart of diabetes is the insulin resistance, okay? So that part is what's getting worse. The sugars is really just a symptom of the insulin resistance, okay? But it's not the actual diabetes. The actual diabetes is the resistance to insulin and the subsequent very high levels of insulin. If you want to think about it, you know, in an analogy, you can think about an infection. So if you have an infection, so you have a big, you know, infection in the lungs or whatever, that's the actual disease. The symptom is the fever, okay? So what you have to do is treat the disease, which is the infection, with antibiotics. You can't treat the symptom of the fever. So if you have a very bad infection, you need antibiotics. You don't need more and more Tylenol. So diabetes is the same thing. The disease is about insulin resistance, but the symptom is the high blood sugar. And yet all our treatment is directed against the high blood sugar. So you can see that controlling the high blood sugars actually doesn't do anything for you, because you're not actually treating the disease. The disease actually continues to progress. And that's the real problem. So up to about 5 years ago, we thought that treating the sugars would make you better, right? And this is what probably all of you have heard. Your sugars are doing fine, your sugars are doing fine. So if you think that the sugars is the same thing as the diabetes, then you'd think that the diabetes is doing fine. But it turns out about 5 years ago that they did three very large studies. And what they found was that no matter if your sugars were well controlled or poorly controlled, it actually didn't make any difference. You still got complications of diabetes, you still got the disease, you know, the heart disease, the strokes, you got the, you know, the eye disease, the kidney disease, all of it. So none of that was made better by controlling the sugars. And if you think about it this way, you can see why. Because you're not actually treating the disease. You're only treating the symptoms. So just like if you take Tylenol for an infection, it might make you look better, but it doesn't actually make you better. So this is the same thing. So the diabetes is the insulin resistance. So you have to understand what is the cause of the insulin resistance, and then you actually have to treat it. So you have to treat the insulin resistance and not the sugars. Now, at a certain point when your sugars are very high, yes, you have to treat it. But that's not what is really important in the disease. The real part of the heart of the disease is the insulin resistance. And because they don't really understand what causes the insulin resistance, they can't actually treat it. So all your treatments, all the metformin, all the glyburide, all the insulin, all of that is aimed at simply treating the sugars. So here's the real question. What causes the insulin resistance? And this is what's happening in the body. This is just a cartoon. So normally the insulin causes you to lower the blood sugars. That's what it does. As you eat, you know, your blood sugars go up and insulin is released to take that sugar out of the blood and into the tissues. And that's a normal thing. When you develop insulin resistance, it's the insulin doesn't seem to work as well. So what happens is that the body kind of pumps up the levels of insulin to make it work well enough to get your sugars out of the way. But the high insulin level is a result of the insulin resistance. But what causes the insulin resistance in the first place? And that's really what you need to understand in order to treat it. Because if you know what causes the insulin resistance, then you can treat it. And it turns out that it's actually the insulin that causes the insulin resistance. And that might seem funny at first, but in fact, that's what happens in most biological systems. So if you look at any other hormone, if you get exposed to it, your body develops resistance to it. So if you look at addictive drugs or alcohol or anything, or smoking or anything, as you take the first one, say for instance marijuana or cocaine or one of these addictive drugs, or you can take Valium or any of these anti-psychotics and stuff, as you take the first one, you get a real high, but every subsequent one is a little bit lower. So you wind up having to take higher and higher doses to get the same effect. And that's really resistance or tolerance. And it happens for all drugs. Insulin is exactly the same. As you take more and more insulin, your body develops more and more resistance to it. And now you see that it's actually a real vicious cycle, because what happens is that if your insulin level is high, then you get some insulin resistance. As you get insulin resistance, you get higher insulin levels. As you get higher insulin levels, you get higher resistance, and it goes round and round. You have a vicious circle. And in fact, treatment with insulin now is not simply not effective. It's actually making things worse because you're feeding into that cycle. So while the insulin lowers your sugars, it is actually raising your insulin resistance. So in fact, it's making things worse. You're getting more diabetes by taking the insulin. And that's the real problem. When you understand the actual disease, you can see why current standard treatment is actually not only not effective, it's actually really, really, really bad for you. Because you're treating the exact, what is actually causing the disease is what you're treating it with. That's never going to work, right? It's just not going to work. So if you think about it, the problem is that the insulin level is too high. So you're not going to make things better by taking more insulin. It's like treating an alcoholic with alcohol, right? This is exactly the same thing. So the same thing happens in alcohol. If you take alcohol, the first one you get, you know, a real buzz, and then every subsequent one is a little lower. And what happens is that if you take the alcohol, your symptoms, you feel a little bit better. But you're not making the alcoholism any better, right? This is the exact same thing. The problem is that your insulin levels are too high. So how can taking more insulin possibly be good for you? And the truth is that it wasn't. It was never good for you. In fact, it made things worse. But people didn't really understand that. And because they didn't understand that, they then made an excuse for themselves by saying that this is a chronic progressive disease. But the truth is that diabetes was not a chronic progressive disease, because we know that we can cure it in many cases. So if you do weight loss surgery or gastric banding or bariatric surgery, basically if you staple somebody's stomach, their diabetes goes away in like 90% of cases. So this was not a chronic progressive disease. This is a curable disease. So if you say that this is a curable disease, yet our treatment is making people worse, the only logical conclusion is that our treatment is completely incorrect. And that's exactly what it is. So when you're thinking about treatment of diabetes, there's a few things you have to consider. One, you have to understand that the key to treating diabetes is not to take more insulin. That makes things worse. The key is, how are you going to get those insulin levels really low? The second thing is that diabetes is a dietary disease, okay? Almost for sure it's a dietary disease. We know that. Yet, if it's a dietary disease, the cure is going to have to be dietary. You can't take a dietary disease and treat it with drugs and pretend that that's going to make things better. But yet, that's what we've done. We've taken a disease which is dietary in nature, and we've prescribed you drugs that suppress the symptoms. It's not going to make it better, and it hasn't. The last 30 years has borne it out. The third thing is that this is not a chronic progressive disease at all. This is, in fact, a curable disease, but you have to treat it the right way. You have to understand what you're doing. So one of the things we do in our clinic is that we are looking at ways of how to lower the insulin levels. And that's the real thing. And one of the simpler ways to do it is intermittent fasting. And that's why we have a lot of people on these sort of protocols. And one of the things to remember is that fasting has been done for many, many years. You know, everybody thinks that it's so crazy. Everybody hears about it at first and thinks it's crazy. But you have to remember that fasting has been done for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And not only that, but almost every single major religion in the world has periods of fasting that are prescribed. Not because, you know, of any particular reason, but they recognize that it is actually a very healthy thing for people to be doing every so often. And why is it so healthy? Because what happens is that when you fast, your insulin levels go down very low. Because you're not eating, your insulin levels go down. And having periods where your insulin level is down helps prevent that vicious cycle, right? It's the insulin that leads to the resistance, which leads to higher insulin. It's a vicious cycle. So if every once in a while, you know, you do Ramadan, which is a month of fasting, or you do, you know, the 40 days of Lent, or whatever it is you do, if you have a period now where your insulin level is very low, you're going to completely break that vicious cycle. And if you do that routinely through the year, then you will stay healthy. You will prevent the development of that resistance. If you don't get the resistance, you don't get the high levels. And that's what we do. So I'm going to show you here what we do kind of in a demonstration. So what we do in terms of the sugars, you can think about it this way. The body actually has the ability to store energy in two ways. So when you eat, you're taking in energy as food. Right, so you can store that in two ways. You can store sugar and you can store fat. Okay, so sugar is stored in the liver as something called glycogen. And there's a limited amount of glycogen that you can store in the liver. But it's readily available. Okay, so it's kind of like a short-term storage. But you can store sugar. If you store more energy than fat, the body will actually turn that into fat. And that's kind of long-term food energy storage. Right? So as long as you're eating, you're going to be burning that off. You're going to be increasing insulin, and insulin is going to tell your body to store some of that away. Okay? So if you have too much sugar, what happens is that some of that is going to go into the stores. But as long as your stores are not full, it's not going to spill over into the blood. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to demonstrate it this way. Normally, as you take a little thing to eat, if you don't have filled up stores of sugar, what's going to happen is that you're going to fill it up a little bit, right? But it's fine. As you don't eat, so for instance, you eat dinner, you take in more calories than you can really use for that period of time. So your body produces insulin, and insulin says to the body, okay, well, I've eaten a big meal. I'll use a little bit of that as energy. The rest I'm going to put in storage as sugar, okay? Because that's what I do. So it fills up the storage, but the storage is empty, so it's fine. Then you go to sleep, so for the next you know, 9, 12 hours, you're not eating. So what happens is that your body is going to take that and it's going to burn it off as energy. So that's fine. That's the normal situation. Now what happens in the diabetic situation is something like this. So over time, your storage is, you know, empty. But over time, as you kind of continue to eat more and more, what happens is that that storage kind of gets filled up. And now here's the situation in diabetes. This is your storage levels of sugar, right? They're completely full, right? And what you do when you eat is this. You're going to take in a meal and you're going to have more sugar. And what's going to happen? It's all going to spill over into the blood, right? So the blood sugar levels go up. There's nothing it can do. It can't store any more. So for a while, your body can compensate. But what does insulin do? So now you're diabetic, and this is what happens every mealtime. Your storage is filled up. Every time you eat, the sugar spills out into the blood. Well, as you take insulin to take care of that problem, the body is going to take that excess sugar and force it back into the body. So what happens to that? Your body is just going to store it as fat. In other words, the insulin is going to make you gain weight. And if you've ever taken insulin, you know already that's exactly what happens. But this is the problem. If you continue to do this day after day, year after year, all you do is gain weight, right? But it doesn't make you any better because all that sugar is still in your body. So it's kind of like that show Hoarders. I don't know if you've seen it, but people, you know, hoard too much stuff and their house is full of stuff. So pretty soon the stuff flows out. And what happens? If you're taking insulin, all you're doing is taking all that garbage and shoving it back into the house. Well, that's not going to help. That's not going to make things better. In fact, over time, it's just going to make things worse. And that's exactly what happens in the current treatment of diabetes. So this is what we do instead. If your cup is completely full, the only rational treatment for diabetes, so this is the situation now in diabetes, your cup is completely full. The only way that's going to make you better is to start draining it off. So that's what you do. So as you fast, what happens? A little bit of this water is going to come out and it's going to get burned off. The next time you fast, a little bit more of this water is going to come and it's going to get drained off. Every single time you do it. So when you eat, it will fill back up a little bit, right? But as you go, what's going to happen is eventually your stores are going to come down and it won't spill over into the blood. You're basically just forcing the body to burn off that sugar. But as you do, you reduce the stores of sugar and you get better. Your diabetes gets better because now you're burning it off. It's like that guy in Hoarders. Instead of shoving it back into your house, which is what the insulin does, we're just going to throw it out. And really, that's really the reason that we do this. You have to lower insulin levels, but you got to get rid of that sugar. Okay? You've stored up too much. And it hasn't been stored up over like a month. It's been stored up over like 10 years, right? So the thing is that it's not going to reverse in a week or a month or 2 months even. Yes, if you do fasting every day, it will reverse faster, right? Because you're getting rid of that sugar every day. So this is what we do. And a few patients actually have been kind enough to share their stories with us. But I'll present a few other cases because we've had, you know, quite a number of people go through the program. So I'll just share their stories with you quickly because really it illustrates really how powerful this new concept is. So the first case we have is Richard, who's here today. And so he's had diabetes for about 10 years now, and he's had a few complications, including some kidney disease, which is why he was here in this office. And he saw a colleague of mine, Dr. Ting, and so he was referred into the Intensive Dietary Management Program, and we started him in June of 2013. And we started him with a fasting regimen as opposed to the amount of insulin that he had. So this is Richard and his wife. Oh, I can't see that very well. And this is what's happened to his weight. So his weight, starting just above 250, has been steadily coming down. And it's down to 210. His waist size has continued to come down. And his hemoglobin A1C, which is the measure of his sugars, has stayed relatively.
All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. That was a little bit of what diabetes is all about. All right, let's move on. I'm looking at Trump, folks. Prognosis negative for Trump care. It's a catastrophe. It's a disaster. 14 million more uninsured next year. 24 million by 20 uninsured by 2026. It's a disaster. And these people are saying you should accept it. It's the greatest thing ever. Give me a break. And the White House has a simple answer to the Congressional Budget Office report. They don't believe it. They don't believe it. In the past, Trump loved the reports that were coming out of the CBO, Budget Office in Washington. But he can't believe it. You know what? It's the same old, same old. If it doesn't benefit what Trump is doing, he doesn't believe it. If it benefits what he's doing, he loves it. You know, if it doesn't go his way. And my understanding, the Congressional Budget Office is ran by Republicans. This man is crazy. This man, he's saying that he doesn't believe it. And Trump is out here trying to sell this thing to the American public and saying, folks, don't believe it. Why in the hell should anybody believe anything that Trump says? Give me a break. He just lied on Obama 6 times and he can't provide any proof, won't provide any proof because there's none there. And now he wants us to believe everything, every other thing that comes out of his mouth. He's got to be nuts. I don't believe anything that these people say. Nothing whatsoever. If it's the Trump administration saying something out there, blowing air out of their asses, it ain't going to happen. I don't listen to them. I don't believe them. I blow them off because the minute you start to listen to them, it winds up being just another lie. These people are pathological liars. They don't know what they're doing. He give jobs to all these folks in Washington, the cabinet positions, Ben Carson. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know how to handle their jobs, but yet we're supposed to listen to them. When we are much smarter than they are. How can I listen to a bunch of dummies when I'm much smarter than they are? And all these people do lie. The word fascist is being thrown around in every corner of America pointing to Trump. And I agree. I totally agree. This healthcare bill is just a diversion. It's deflecting away from the Russia investigation. It's deflecting away from the mountain of lies he told on Obama about wiretapping one of his buildings. It's a deflection away from the groping, even maybe sexual assault. A lot of these women that were suing him in the past, a few months ago, they've been bought and paid off. They settled out of court with money. So Trump doesn't have to. I mean, remember all these court dates that he supposedly had? He settled out of court. He paid these people off. That's why there's nothing else being said about this. This guy is diabolical. And the White House is loaded with people who are nothing but diabolical, untrue, unsavory, criminals, goons, gangsters, thugs in the White House. Folks, we are in some trying times here, and it's going to take us, the people to take back this country, and that's a fact. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be American. Some of those rights are being threatened, taken away. But we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard, fighting non-violently. Now, Trump, the White House, Trump didn't mean wiretapping when he accused Obama of wiretapping. This is a headline of an article I'm reading on Huffington Post. Okay, and I quote, the White House is saying this. Trump, Donald Trump, didn't mean wiretapping when he said, when he accused Obama of wiretapping. These people are out trying to explain this away because they have no evidence. They want you to believe something coming from the White House and when there's no evidence of anything. Trump tries to scoot around the law because he's Donald Trump. He thinks he's above it all because he's Donald Trump. He thinks you should believe everything he says and, you know, enact everything he wants because he's Donald Trump. This guy and his minions that are going around talk shows, radio, and television trying to say Trump didn't mean what he said. He meant it. Trump meant what he said. Because he doubled down on it 2 or 3 times. He doubled down on it. He tweeted it 6 times before he went off on Arnold Schwarzenegger. He tweeted 6 times. So he either has to, basically, he didn't provide any evidence, no proof of this happening. So he has to apologize. He has to retract this. He's not going to retract a damn thing. This is why I say Obama should sue this guy for dragging his name through the mud, if not for defamation of character. He should sue this guy. And this time, take his ass to court. Don't let him or his goons come around and buy you off. Obama should take his ass to court. We want to see that, but I doubt it because Obama, like I said before, earlier into the show, Obama is above it all. He's a statesman. He tries to stay above the fray. But every time the Democrats stay above the fray, they get their asses kicked. There's no doubt of it. Stop staying above the fray when your opponent is in the mud and the gutter. You got to get down there with them or they will kick you in the teeth and you will lose. And this is how the Democrats have been losing. Instead of getting down in the mud with the Republicans, they want to stay above the fray. I think staying above the fray is pretty good. I think it's decent. But in this event, when you're dealing with these Republicans, you got to get down in the mud with them. You got to fight fire with fire or they will run you over or they will win the fight. This is how we have Republicans running everything now. Because Democrats stayed above the fray and got their asses kicked. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on right here on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me all over the place. I don't know. I'm kind of tickled today, folks. Follow me all over the place. I do enjoy what I do. If you enjoy what you do, if you don't enjoy what you do, folks, you got to be. We're going to talk about that tomorrow. Enjoying what you do, loving what you do, because you have to. You can't. I was talking about this a few shows back. So many people are going to jobs that they hate. They can't stand it, but they got to go. And I'm going to say this again. Stop hating your job, because if you hate your job, you're going to be depressed. You're going to be unhappy. Try to love your job, even if it's one of the worst places in the world. Try to love it. Don't get yourself depressed, you know, at working someplace where you don't like. But try to love what you do. Be happy in what you're doing.
Help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Anyone ever saw? Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a claw.
Great show, more guests. It's going to be fun, as always. All right, thanks for tuning in to the George Wilder Dugan Show. Join me tomorrow. Tomorrow, starting at 6 o'clock p.m. Bye-bye, everybody. Have a good one.
In a troubled world, I pray the Lord to keep hatred from the mighty and the mighty from the small.